Hello, this is Chris Nelson for EvolveConsciousness.org. Thank you for listening. It's been a while since I did a presentation. The last one was in July, and it was a sort of part one out of the new work that I've been doing for this presentation that I'll be doing now and the next two. I've decided to split them up, I guess, into four parts. So reality processing was to explain how I've been able to understand how consciousness processes reality, and it deals with this presentation, which will be dealing with consciousness and truth and the two levels of truth, which I've already talked about in previous presentations, the truth level one and the truth level two, and that's in many places, especially consciousness and causality symbolism, where I've emphasize that aspect of existence contrasted to consciousness and how it relates to the truth level one being the reality that is, and truth level two being our capacity to determine the true way to live, the right way, the good way. So this presentation, most of the infographics for the four parts of the presentations were done in June, and then I've been slacking off and not doing them, so here is the new information being presented about how, on terms and definitions, we're going to start with on consciousness and truth, define some terms and definitions, and then go into more in-depth look at to how these things work in our reality that anyone can demonstrate just by thinking about what I'm talking about. Verify it through your own life. So the first infographic is consciousness, and that's from Latin con, which means with, and sio, meaning knowledge. Consciousness. So consio, knowledge with, and then ness. When you put ness at the end of a word as a suffix, it's the action quality or state of something. So the action quality or state of being with knowledge. That's what consciousness means in a pure etymological sense. As you can see, it completely revolves around knowledge and having the capacity to have knowledge within you, not simply being a piece of knowledge, like a human is just, that's knowledge, you're a human, that's a piece of knowledge, you being human, but to have knowledge within you in greater capacities, well, that's what consciousness is actually about, at that basic level of knowledge. This is from the Proto-Indo-European sky or ski, I don't know how you pronounce it, and it means to cut, split, or dissect. And that's what the root of knowledge is to cut, split, and dissect. And that's what we do, is we split things, we compare things, we dissect things, one thing contrasted to another in order to learn about it. So this is of being with knowledge, to see the variability, multiplicity, and diversity, what is and is not another. It's about identity. So the variability, multiplicity, and diversity of the universe, reality, and existence. If you didn't cut, split, and dissect the things in reality, or if reality itself wasn't already cut, split, and dissected into the variability, multiplicity, and diversity of all the things that exist as identifiable things in themselves, that's what identity is, then you would have no knowledge, because everything would be one thing. There wouldn't be variability, multiplicity, and diversity. Nothing would be cut, split, or dissected. And you would have no identity, except for identity of one. Whatever that one mass of amalgamated goop would be, you know, everything put together, it would be nothing. It'd be something, but it'd be nothing. It would actually be nothing, because it would just be this one thing, and that's all there would be. So we have also, apart from consciousness, we have conscience. So even if you don't look at the word, the etymology of conscience, if you know con is with, and science, well, science is knowledge. I've done that in my previous presentations. I've gone into the word science. I've gone into the word consciousness etymologically, and I've done presentations on that. So this is just a summarization, a recapitulation, more condensed from those presentations and more information that I've learned since then. So conscience is with knowledge right there, and science is knowledge, so with knowledge. But more specifically, con scientia is related to moral conscience. So why is with knowledge, specifically etymologically with knowledge, or knowledge together, why is that related to moral conscience, knowledge together of our behavior? Because that's what you can do with con or com. You can do with or together. So you're either with knowledge or you know something together. As in with other people, you know something together. Which would be your moral conscience of knowing how to act towards other people and other people to act towards you. That's what conscience is. So it's not strictly being with knowledge. It's a play on, I view it as a play on the con. Instead of with knowledge, it's knowledge together. And then that implies together means you and another, means two people. So you can have consciousness alone, because you're just with knowledge. If you have a consciousness that's capable of absorbing knowledge and doing something with it, retaining knowledge, then you have consciousness. But for conscience to be in existence, you need someone else there. And that's how morality works. I haven't gone into this, but you can just imagine it. If you're the only being in the universe or on the planet that has a capacity to understand morality, to have a conscience, then morality will only exist because you are there, because you can understand morality and you can identify with the concept of morality and live by it or against it. And if you don't have the capacity to understand what morality is, then you're living amorally and you're just doing things and they could be moral or immoral. You wouldn't know because you don't have that concept or the capacity to understand the concept of morality through your own actions. But that requires another. If you're alone and you're doing actions and there's no other to consider, then there's no morality. Anyways, I'm getting off track. This is other work that I've done that I haven't presented yet. But just to clarify on conscience and how we can see etymologically, knowledge together implies someone else. But if you're with knowledge, all that implies is you in existence. Conscience requires you and someone else. So Latin con, with or together, and knowledge. You know, you could say it's all the same thing. Fine, con science, with knowledge, no problem. But why is the moral aspect there? Why has this become a moralized aspect? So I look at the etymology and I see together with knowledge, or knowledge together. It implies a me and you. We have Latin con science. So that con science, conscience, is the same as the Greek syneidesis, and it literally means with knowledge. So again, if you take knowledge together, or together with knowledge, you say, no, that's too much of an extrapolated etymological meaning. Okay, sure, I admit. But again, it still comes down to, it means regarding morality, and why does it mean that if it only means with knowledge? And we'll see later, it's part of this presentation. Syneidesis and synderesis, I've talked about this in other presentations. Syneidesis is with knowledge, and you gain that knowledge. Knowledge comes from the past. You have to have a memory to retain knowledge. It comes from the past. It doesn't come from the future. The future hasn't happened. Syneidesis is knowledge and is gained from the past. It's about the past, what has happened. And synderesis is about guiding yourself into the future with that knowledge of the past. So how do we guide ourselves into the future? What is true living about? It's about living morally. So what's the knowledge of the past in order to live into the future? Since we're together, we're other people, it's all about morality. That's the most important knowledge for higher living. So conscience, conscious, and conscience, conscience, conscious, and conscience are the same etymologically. Conscience is directly linked with syneidesis, both relating to morality. Knowledge together is moral knowledge about living right, the basis for realer life. So my other presentations have gone into this, especially regarding the Egyptian symbolism, Kamat, and the Egyptian alphabet symbolism and all that. If you go look into it, you'll understand more and what realer, higher, truer life is, a life of Ma'a, living under Ma'at, the concept, the imagined concept of Ma'at, which is balance and reciprocity and order and right and good. So do check out previous presentations if you want more information. I've talked about much of this before. Slide number 2, consciousness. Patterns of the past and present are recognized as knowledge. There are patterns in the world and within consciousness. We can recognize patterns in the world that repeat, and we can also recognize patterns within our own consciousness that are abstractions of patterns in the world, and we can develop even more pattern recognition. Meaning, value, and purpose is attributed to the patterns seen. So whenever we see a pattern, we recognize it, and then we can even attribute a meaning to that pattern, why that pattern is repeating in reality, the value of it, that pattern's worth more than another pattern we see, the purpose, and we attribute a purpose, some similar to meaning. So I'll get more into patterns in a bit, but anything that repeats is a pattern. You know, if 1 plus 1 equals 2, and then you have 3 and 4 and 5, well, the pattern is you add 1 every time. Also, a beep. A beep, you hear a beep, and then 5 seconds go by, there's no beep, and then there's another beep, and then another 5 seconds go by, and then there's another beep. So the beep isn't a constant in reality, but it's a pattern. There's a pattern for the beep, because it goes into existence, and then it's out of existence, then it comes back into existence. Anyways, I'll leave that for later, but just to give you an understanding of what I'm trying to get to with patterns and repetition. Interaction in social living has patterns of behavior. That's how we recognize morality. Certain patterns repeat, negative patterns, then we identify them and see the results and the consequences that they lead to. There is a repetition of results and consequences to actions. We judge and learn from our past actions, using that knowledge to guard and watch over our future actions to not repeat the same mistakes. This is how to perceive, conceive, understand, and navigate reality with other consciousness beings, learning morality. That's what it's about. We watch over and guard over our future actions to not repeat the same mistakes that we learned from in the past. That's how we perceive, conceive, understand, and navigate reality from the past with other beings. We learn from our mistakes, and we learn morality in order to live better into the future. That's what all life's about. That's the purpose of evolving. You want higher consciousness? Learn morality and live it. And learn how to develop your consciousness to have the proper inner vision of the outer vision of reality, so that you see things clearly. You need to have your inner vision clear so that you have the proper outer vision. So it's not just about moral knowledge. Yes, that gets you to a more realer, higher, truer living, but you need to have a developed cognitive capacity as well in order to promote a continuation of your evolution in consciousness and not just remain at a position of moral well-being. So science is repeatability to demonstrate knowledge. That's what science is. Think of the scientific method. You do something, you test it, and then if someone wants to verify your results, they repeat it. That's what science is. That's as we're going to see, that's how truth is determined. That's how knowledge is verified. That's how truth is verified. Because in veracity, veritas, verifiability, they all come from the same root of truth. That's in a few slides. I always tend to get ahead of myself. Sorry about that. So, science, consciousness, you see how they all relate? Patterns of repeatability can be recognized and demonstrated, especially those related to interaction with others, which is morality. So patterns of repeatability can be recognized and demonstrated. The beeping, a cold, it persists for a certain amount of time. Your life persists for 70 years or whatever. There's patterns of repeatability. I am a pattern of repeatability. I don't have a cessation in the persistence of my existence, but I'm still repeating. Since I was born, my cells replicate and they repeat and they allow me to repeat into the future. Based on where I am now, I can continuously repeat the pattern of who I am. My body repeats into the future. But the most important thing about human interaction and living into the future is morality. That's the pattern of repeatability that we need to learn. When a certain action happens over and over and the consequences are always the same, and we can learn that the actions are a negative because they always produce a negative consequence. This is science. It's repeatability. This is why morality, it's why I have a site, which I haven't worked on much, but natural law science, because morality, not just natural law as in any law like cause and effect, but natural moral law is a science because it is repeatable, because you can repeat what was done and you can always have the same actions, the same consequences produced. So this is true from within consciousness. This is the true vision from within consciousness that leads to the wisdom of right action. The ability to see correctly is higher consciousness. So yeah, that's one part of higher consciousness, is seeing correctly, and then that allows you to reach another part of higher consciousness, which is to act morally, to be moral. But you need that capacity in consciousness to dig deeper into morality, what it is, to understand it more, rather than to just know it as a fact. Something is wrong, you can know something is wrong, but do you understand why it's wrong? And the why of logic leads you to that truth, to actually understand that truth of why it's wrong, rather than just have knowledge. Knowledge, oh, that's wrong. So you can just regurgitate that that's wrong because someone told you a piece of knowledge that is wrong, but do you actually have the understanding to validate that knowledge? Or maybe that knowledge is misinformation. Alright, slide 3, more on consciousness. The vision of the past we judge is synidesis, which involves memory. And the vision of the future, using that knowledge to watch and guard against mistakes, is synderesis or synteresis. These are both conscience from consciousness. Synidesis and synteresis are forms of conscience, and they come from consciousness. Conscience and conscious etymologically mean with knowledge or knowledge together, depending on how you want to look at it specifically. The knowledge of living together is morality. This is how higher order consciousnesses survive optimally, through knowledge of cooperative behavior and living. Behavioral analysis is recognition of patterns of behavior. And also, just emphasize on, if you went through reality processing, I mentioned inner and outer vision in those presentations. So here we're talking about the inner vision. We have two aspects of vision, one to the left and one to the right, one looking to the east and one looking to the west, one that looks towards the past and one that looks towards the future. And I've talked about this in symbolism of the Egyptian symbolism of the two lionesses, Akara, or I forget the name of it anyways, that's in the other presentation, you can go look at it. And elemental quaternity, I forget the rest of the hyphenated name of that presentation, but it's called elemental quaternity, and you'll have an infographic in there, pretty sure, on the two lionesses. But there's not much of an explanation, I'm just bringing it forth to tie back into that presentation. This information is more relevant to that symbol that I'm bringing forth about the two lionesses. Anyways, the correspondence of social interaction gives us feedback for guiding our future actions. Morality is not some external force. It is determined objectively from reality, existence, as our optimal interaction in existence. If there was no humans in existence, if there were no humans on Earth, let's limit it to Earth. Or you could go out into the whole universe and say no beings with consciousness capable of understanding morality. But if we just limit it to Earth, we'll say no beings capable of understanding morality on Earth. Remove all humans, and there's only amoral animals, then you don't have morality anywhere. Morality doesn't exist anywhere if you are not creating morally, or have the capacity to understand how to create morally or immorally. All the actions done by amoral animals will be amoral animals because they don't have the capacity to act within a moral or immoral desire or care to engage in an action that can be classified or identified as moral or immoral. They're not moral or immoral beings. They can't do moral or immoral actions. They're doing amoral actions because they don't have an understanding of morality or immorality. So I have work on this that I haven't presented either. So essentially, morality only comes from within. It comes from us, consciousness, understanding how other beings, how other consciousnesses, how other higher order consciousnesses capable of understanding morality are engaging together. I understand morality and you understand morality, or at least we have the capacity because our consciousness is of that higher order capacity. Even if we're dumbing ourselves down and we want to ignore thinking about reality, we want to believe we're amoral animals, well no, you're, even if you ignore morality and you engage in immorality, you're not an amoral animal. You're choosing to ignore your abilities of consciousness to discern reality, and you're living immorally, trying to be an amoral animal. Anyways, I'll stop that there because that's getting too much off topic. But anyways, I was just saying the vision, the inner vision of the past and the future requires the vision of the external reality. The external vision in order to provide the inner vision. The external light of existence upon our external senses provides evidence for how we are living and interacting, allowing us to learn through the internal light of consciousness and not repeat mistakes. So substitute light with vision, exactly what I was talking about just a moment ago. This is what it's all about. It's evidence for living and interacting with others, for cooperation, and that's what consciousness leads to, and conscience is for that cooperative living in order to survive optimally together. That's what it's all about. Morality. That's what it's all about. It's about optimal survival together. If you want to ignore morality, then it's about trying to survive yourself with disregard for others, and it's all about you and survival and dog-eat-dog, when it's so much simpler to cooperate, it's more efficient, and you're not being immoral by violating others simply on a lower consciousness basis to survive and perpetuate your survival in existence. Infographic number 4, this is pattern recognition and repeatability. I just wanted to emphasize, if you're having trouble understanding the brief aspects of pattern recognition and repeatability that I've been mentioning and how it relates to consciousness and seeing patterns, as patterns are everywhere in reality, and patterns are the basis. Patterns and repeatability are the basis for knowledge. Everything that repeats is can be considered a pattern of some kind. Even if it's not very colorful or inventive of a pattern, it's very basic and simple, it's still a pattern. It has a repeatability, and everything in existence is repeatable and hence is a pattern. So when we are consciousness and we recognize patterns in reality, essentially everything is a pattern at one level or degree or another, and it's repeatable, and that's what we do as consciousness. We're pattern recognition. We recognize the patterns and the repeatability because that's what's in reality. That's knowledge. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I know it increases plus 1, and then 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. It increases by 2. 1, 3, 5, 7, 9, it increases by 2, except instead of even numbers, it's odd numbers. 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 21, that's the Fibonacci. And then I can get into more complex ones. If I do 1, 5, 3, 7, 5, 9, 7, 11, 9, 13, 11, then you'd have to think more to use your inner light of consciousness on this external, the external light you see of these numbers, and you could try to envision the pattern that is actually behind the scenes in the overt particulars that we're seeing of these numbers. There's actually hidden universals, you could say, behind the appearances of these numbers. There are a hidden layer of substance of numbers that are producing this number set. These numbers can continue as long as you understand the underlying pattern, the substantive foundational structure that produces the number sequence. So you have 1 to 5 is plus 4, minus 2, plus 4, minus 2, plus 4, minus 2. That's all the pattern is. Very easy. The next one is more difficult. I'll leave you to figure it out if you want. Also related to this, in infographic 4B, this is, I believe, from Consciousness and Causality Symbolism Part 2, probably one of the last infographics in that short presentation. Now this has to do just more emphasis on an understanding of patterns, repeatability, and how that relates to, as that presentation demonstrated, causality, and how patterns and repeatability are cycles, they're loops, they are feedbacks, they're recursive. So if you want to understand, if you never went through that presentation and you want some more information on presentations regarding repeatability and patterns and persistence, which I'll be getting more into shortly and in the next presentations, I believe. Well, this one, 4B, in that presentation on causality and causality and consciousness symbolism, part 2, or consciousness and causality symbolism, part 2. Anyways, so check that out if you want to. So here on infographic 5 is, a summary of other work I've done, which I have links to at the bottom here. Analogy, balance, and in between, words, reality, and proportions, and logic, as part of the Language and Reality Part 5 presentation. So logic, ratio, and proportions. Ratios and proportions are patterns formed between things in reality / existence. If we process our perceptions in parallel to reality or existence, then we can create art or artificial things in reality existence through our arms, our artifices, our arms, that are in harmony with the existing ratios, proportions, and patterns that function in reality. So you want to create things in reality, you want to create patterns of repeatability, persistence, some persistent thing in reality, well, you better make sure you understand how existing things operate in reality in order to modify and make something that operates and functions within the same patterns and parameters of functionality of that thing, within the laws of existence. You're going to process in parallel to reality and existence rather than imagine things that don't exist and believe them to be real. Processing and outputting into reality existence with the correct ratios and proportions is to create in harmony with the existing pattern structures and laws of reality or existence. So when you process with logic and then you output with your actions and the wisdom of reality with the correct ratio, when you have the correct proportion, when you compare one thing to another and you find the pattern and you repeat it and you verify it, which is science, the repeatability, you repeat it and it's still there, that's an aspect of existence. Well, then you have the ratio, you have the proportion, you understand, you've compared things in reality, you've corresponded and correlated, and now you understand how the harmony works. Now you can repeat that harmony in existence through those patterns, instructions, and laws of reality and existence that you already understand. This is how morality works. Proportions of one thing to another, action, something that didn't exist that now exists, an action, was it a wrong action or a right action? Well, what happens after? What's the new existence that emerges as a result of the causal stimulus of that action? Well, there's the consequence. Is that a wrong consequence? Is that bad? Is it evil? Yeah, well then, the action that produced it isn't a good action if it clearly produces a wrong result. So this is just how our consciousness functions and everything in reality. That's all I'm doing, is just describing what I've analyzed in reality about myself, about others, and I'm putting it forth as information. You want to deny it? Deny it. Do you understand what I'm talking about? Awesome. If you want to try to disprove what I'm talking about, well, go into reality and find some aspects that disprove what I'm saying, because everything I'm talking about is what I understand from reality itself. It's not from reading books. Some of the information I've gotten is when I did my work on the trivium and stuff, but, you know, a lot of it is just thinking about reality. So if you have other people that have written stuff about this before and they disprove it, please let me know, because I went researching on a few things, but the stuff that I'm talking about, I don't really find many people talking about. Even the old philosophers in the 20th and 19th and 18th century, you know, they had a lot of people are infatuated with the originality. Whoever, that's how you become famous. Whoever comes up with an original thought, an original concept, and is the first one to propagate it, becomes famous. That's how it works in industry with inventions. You're the first one. You're known for being the first one, and then it's always, even if someone comes up with a better version and then tweaks it and makes a better version, well, all you've done is modify what the first person has discovered and created and invented. So the first person always gets the emphasis. That's why people are, as the way I see it, is people all have this infatuation with all these old philosophers. Yeah, they talk about a lot of truth, and from what I've read, they also have things in error. So you can't just take, you know, oh, Aristotle is 100% right, and Plato's 100% right, or Leibniz, or Goethe, or however you pronounce his name, or, you know, whoever else you want to talk about, Bertrand Russell, and oh, this person was always right. No one's always right. We need to get over this cult of personality and this infatuation with these previous philosophers and just get with the truth in reality and look at reality to demonstrate things. So sure, go through old philosophers and see if they're talking about stuff that you haven't considered before. Go through all their material, take hours and hours and hours and spend weeks and months. I didn't want to do that. I've read some of their stuff and sure, they got good stuff, but when I look for things specifically that a lot of people aren't talking about right now in our times, and maybe there's a hint of it here and there in the past, they get some aspects of it, but they're still confused about other aspects. So I find personally that I just think about reality from the information that I've gathered from other people, and it helps me look at reality itself to see what's in reality. And sure, I'll go read other people's things, but I don't put an emphasis on what they say based on their authority of being the first who came out with a concept or idea or a certain philosophy. So now they're the godfather of a certain philosophy, and you can't go against what they say about a certain philosophy because they're always right. Well, that's not the way it works in reality. Truth is always right. Reality is always right. And what people conceive about reality and try to explain about reality can be wrong. So if I'm wrong, please demonstrate it. Because what I'm doing is demonstrating how reality and consciousness functions, and all you have to do is take the time to think about it and verify it in your own life, and you'll see that what I'm talking about is how things work. And it's beautiful to see and beautiful to understand. You understand more about yourself. This is what it's all about, is know thyself. That's why my focus is on these root causal factors of ourselves and why we create these things and how we create our reality. Because that's the real underlying foundational factor. It's not the immediate things going on in our lives, the government and the police and the military and the monetary system and all these symptoms that we've created. You know, you want to tackle the police and the order followers and the monetary system and the bankers and the Vatican and all these things. All these things are symptoms of the degenerate, well, maybe not degenerate, but devolved state of consciousness that we're in, the deplorable garbage state of consciousness that we're in, the inability to think. People just don't want to think. So we're in a lot of trouble in understanding why we are creating the world, the human level reality that we've created, the human way of living that we've created. We tackle government, military, money. People need to understand these things to understand that they are wrong and why they're wrong. But why did they even get created in the first place? And this is the problem, is because we don't even understand how our consciousness makes sense of reality to develop our worldview, our self-image, our sense of self, our self-worth. And we get beliefs conditioned into us because we're not able to process reality ourselves, and then we believe what other people tell us, and then we live according to the beliefs other people tell us that we need to live by, and we're never verifying things for ourselves. We're not critical thinkers. We don't think enough. That's the state of humanity now and back in thousands and thousands of years. That's the problem. The problem is consciousness. That's what has always been the problem, is consciousness. I don't think I have this in any of my presentations. It's in my notes somewhere, but I'll find it and I'll try to put it in the future presentation on this four-part series, I guess. But consciousness is the problem. Do you want to know what the root of the problem is? Do you really want to know? Well, it's consciousness. That's what the whole problem is. It's all consciousness. That's where the problem is. We are our own worst enemies. We lie to ourselves more easily than we lie to others. And we need to. Because we want to believe in whatever we want to believe in. We don't want the truth. We want to believe whatever we want to believe. It makes us feel good. It keeps us perpetuating and sustaining our delusional worldviews and our sense of self and our self-images, because we can't face the truth and see how corrupted we are. So we just want to believe whatever we want to believe. So we lie to ourselves, and as a result of believing our own lies, we then lie to others. Or we believe other people's lies, and then we keep lying to ourselves, and then we lie to others, and we're just basically propagating lies left and right all over the place, because we think they're truths. Consciousness needs to be developed in a critical thinking capacity to understand, to know thyself. How does your cognitive capacity work? How does your affective emotional capacity work? How does your active capacity work into the world? The trinity of consciousness, all these things, the psychology, attachment, patterns and reality, repeatability, truth, morality, how to understand these things for ourselves. Where do they come from? They don't come from some force outside of us. They don't come from some being. They come from us. It all comes from consciousness. That's what I've been trying to get at the beginning of 2015 in my presentations on consciousness and causality symbolism. This is the big revelation I've had in correcting my work, where I used to externalize, objectify, and reify what I used to call truth, love, good, right, morality, natural law, blah, 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 blah. I used to put it all into some objectified external existence so that it could be objective and real. But it's not. All they are concepts that come from within us that we use to symbolize and give an identity to aspects of reality. Anyways, I'm getting always going on off tangents because there's a lot of subtext to even the information I'm presenting. There's minutia of details of clarity that can get you to understand it, and if you don't have it, then you might have some trouble understanding what I'm trying to present here. Anyways, infographic number 6, continuing with logic, is logic and knowledge. Knowledge is something cut, divided, and separated for it to be known as it is, apart, split, and dissected, compared, and contrasted to something else. That's what I've been talking about. It's compare and contrast. That's how persistence, repeatability, and patterns are detected. Anyways, to understand what is now cut requires collecting the pieces to assimilate them into a non-contradictory manner. So to understand what you cut, what's been cut, divided, and separated, dissected, split, and is apart, needs to be compared and contrasted to something else. So you need to collect one thing to compare it to another. But if you just have one thing and another, then it's just one thing and another. So you need to collect them and then compare them in a non-contradictory manner. And logic is from the Proto-Indo-European root leg, meaning to collect. Patterns are detected by comparing data collected about reality. Logic is required for greater vision, awareness, and pattern recognition of reality. So if you weren't following, logic has to do with collecting. So when you're collecting data, everything that's been cut, divided, and separated, apart, split, and dissected, in order to make sense of it and to compare and collect it, it needs to be done in a non-contradictory manner, which requires logic, and logic is the whole basis for collecting. And that's how you form patterns, is because you collect data about reality, you compare it, and you detect patterns. And logic is required for that greater vision, awareness, and pattern recognition of reality. Conscience and consciousness can develop towards the apotheosis of higher transcendental consciousness and the eye of providence, vision of reality. Knowledge and vision of the past provides a guide and foresight to improve the future. This is the power to transcend the biological, environmental, and social conditioning programming. So I'll get more into the Eye of Providence at the end of this presentation, and more specifically to explain what it really is more in depth, and how I can explain this demonstrably in reality and consciousness. That'll be in part 4. So you'll get more of it in this presentation, and then in part 4 you'll get some more explanation and to clear up what I was talking about before at the beginning relating to truth and all of consciousness, all of reality and, quote, God, and how people get confused about that in their conceptual frameworks and how it gets convoluted and how that validates their imagination of some being, God, and that it exists and all that stuff. I'll explain that. You'll understand it. It all has to do with reification, objectification, and trying to make something real when it's just a concept, an idea, an imagination in our consciousness. But to explain the last paragraph, as this is hinting at what this is all about, is the apotheosis. If you're familiar with Joseph Campbell, apotheosis is part of his monomyth storyline, where you go through the darkness in order to reform yourself and remake yourself into a better person for the new world, so that you can create in the new world and create a new world. And that's the apotheosis, is that self-transformation process from a darker state to a more righteous state, to a more state of light and good, in order to leave the old world and enter a new world for you. Leave the old world that you were and enter a new world, and also leave the old world of corruption and enter back into the old world, but to create a new world. There's many layers of meaning in that monomyth. It's very interesting. So apotheosis is about the self-transformation. It means becoming God. It's at the end of this presentation. Let me just see if I can find it. No, I didn't even put it. It has to do with becoming a god, transforming into a god. That's why apotheosis is a self-transformative process, and it involves... the apotheosis involves the transformation towards a higher state, and that higher state is transcendental consciousness. Transcendental consciousness isn't the reified, objectified truth, love, good, right, morality, natural, moral law as some force, some magical force existing outside, so that we can give it an objective reality. That's the authority. The authority outside of ourselves, external authority outside of ourselves. Anyways, this, I tried to separate this aspect, part of it into part 1 and part 2 here, and part of it into part 4, but it all ties together. It's all about the same aspect of higher living, realer living, more moral living, and that involves getting to a transcendental consciousness and having the eye of providence, which is having the vision, internal vision, to see reality properly. So you have to have a transcendental consciousness, a capacity to understand morality, have the vision of the past in order to have the vision and foresight of the future. Because eye of providence, I don't know if you knew, but a providence, providence, has provisier, and it just has to do with sight, seeing forward, foresight. That's all providence means. An eye of providence is actually having the eye to have foresight, having the eye to guide yourself into the future. Then people automatically associate it with divine. It has nothing to do with divine. That's all in your mind. You imagine and extrapolated some divine pseudo-spiritual thing. Oh, it's the eye of providence, it's God, oh, it's the one eye, oh, it's God. No, it's all symbolism. All of this is symbolism. You're all trapped in symbolic constructs that you think are reality, and you take the symbolism that you've imagined yourself or someone else has inculcated and invoked into you as a part of reality, and you reify it, you objectify it, and then it becomes real. It becomes a reality when all it is a symbol. And we've called it the Eye of Providence. What does it mean? It's an eye about the foresight of the future. It's a guide to your future. Anyways, I go into this more, especially in part 4, but just to understand what the key terms I'm using here. Transcendental consciousness has to do with you and evolving to transcendental consciousness. The Eye of Providence, the vision of reality from within, the inner light to see the outer light, that comes from you. Consciousness, not an external force. So all this is about transcendental consciousness, having the capacity to see into the future, the foresight to see where you're going, to see how your actions will affect others, all of that. This is the power to transcend the biological, environmental, and social conditioning and programming that we have currently created for ourselves and are currently living in. We can transcend the current condition and create a better world. Well, how do we do that? Well, it comes from the power of consciousness to affect the primacy of existence. And that's transcendental consciousness, is that power we have as humans. So, this gets pretty complicated, but that'll be more in part 4, I guess. I'll clear this up. But there's levels of consciousness, and then within the higher levels, there's higher levels, and then there's higher levels and lower levels within those higher levels. Anyways, transcendental consciousness, there's the first part where it's even the capacity to alter yourself, a self-renewal capacity for changing, for self-transformation, for apotheosis, to change yourself, to become a better person. That's the real transcendental consciousness. But you can have lower forms of transcendental consciousness where you have the capacity to engage in this transcendental consciousness. Means you are a higher order being, such as a human, versus lower order beings, such as non-humans, who are not at a default higher order consciousness capacity to then actualize a transcendental consciousness within themselves. So it's not that you automatically have transcendental consciousness. You have the capacity to actualize transcendental consciousness, to transcend the biological, environmental, and social conditioning and programming that you find yourself in, that has been conditioned into you by other people, by government, by society, by education, and that has us living in this way we're living. So if we want to transcend the way we're currently living, the power we need is the power of consciousness, and this requires a transcendental consciousness where you understand this apotheosis, self-transformative, self-corrective, self-reflective, self-analytical aspect of ourselves. Because if you don't engage in self-analysis, self-reflection, self-correction to evolve and better yourself and improve yourself, then you're not in transcendental consciousness. You may be a higher order consciousness compared to lower order consciousnesses such as non-humans, but within that higher order consciousness capacity of human animals, you are engaging life as a lower order being. A lower order consciousness within the higher order consciousness potentiality capacities. So I don't know if you understand what I'm talking about so far, but I am working on some infographics for that part 4 to really explain the real power in reality and in our lives to affect change, and who the real authority is, and where morality comes from, and where truth comes from. And spoiler alert, it all comes from us. I've been intimating this and indicating this in several small parts in my previous presentations. It's all about the power of consciousness, us, and all these other things that we externalize as real, even though they're just imagined. It all comes from the power of consciousness itself to imagine it, and then to reify, externalize, and objectify it as a real thing in itself, in order to give it validity and veracity as an existent thing in reality, when it isn't. It's all consciousness tricking itself in order to believe what it wants to believe. Because again, these answers consciousness likes to answer things, it likes to question things naturally anyways. You can be dumbed down and put into a conditioned state where you don't question things, where you don't have curiosity, and that's essentially being dead as far as I'm concerned. This is this lower level living. Even though you are a higher order consciousness, capacity, potential being, you're not living up to that potential. You're living as a lower order consciousness being, focused on pleasure or survival or comfort or convenience, whatever. You seem to love your servitude, so you don't question, you're not curious, you don't doubt the current condition, you don't question it, you're not curious to learn more, you don't really care for truth, and so you just keep believing what you want to believe because it's comfortable and convenient, and it provides you with a perpetuation of that current condition, a persistence of your current state. It allows it to repeat into the future as a pattern so that you don't have to change. Because again, this power, this transcendental consciousness, apotheosis, self-transformation, is all about change. That's what real living is about. Higher moral living is about becoming something better, and that involves change. That's what evolution is about. Evolution is change. So I'm not talking about body evolution. I'm not talking about transhumanism. I'm talking about real, real change for higher, truer, realer living. And this all has to do with morality. All the ancient wisdom has to do with morality, and that's what I realized when I had the epiphany about when I was doing my research into Ma'at and the Egyptian, and that had me have my epiphany on consciousness, and through the work on the Trivium, all of it came together, and I understand so much more than I did, and I'm trying to express this understanding to other people in so many different ways, so that you can connect the dots and put things together and finally see the power of consciousness, really, all, or at least all the facets that I'm able to explain to you on how we fool ourselves, how we are our own worst enemies, how we believe whatever we want, and our propensity to choose answers that provide feel-good conclusions to questions we have, so that we can believe in those and feel good about ourselves and our position in the universe. So this has been work in past presentations. But it's all about the same thing as our power of consciousness and our ability to affect the primacy of existence in positive or negative ways. And this has to do with aligning and harmonizing with reality, with truth as it is, versus believing in imagined ideas and then externalizing and reifying them as reality, and then you create all these cults and religions and wars and murders and death, and it's all been based from consciousness. It hasn't been based in reality. If they would have been basing it in reality, they would have understood morality. But they didn't, because they were overriding the morality of reality. They were overriding reality, existence, and truth itself with the power of consciousness. This is the danger of consciousness. It's a double-edged sword. I've talked about this in other presentations. This is the... with great power comes great responsibility. Peter Parker's uncle in Spider-Man, that's a very famous saying. That's a saying that applies, that everyone needs to understand. With great power comes great responsibility. Human consciousness is a tremendous power. It's not shooting lightning bolts out of your eyes or anything. It's not Jedi style or whatever. Get back to the ground. Talk about the power to affect our own lives and lead our own lives in harmony with truth or against it. And we're all too willing to lead our own lives against truth in favor of the concocted imaginations that we invent in our consciousness, or other people invent and convince us of, as believing in them as a, quote, truth, but it's not a truth. Anyways, I think I've gone on a tangent long enough. Sorry about that. Let's continue. There's just a lot, you know, that I try to talk about to tie everything in to help everyone, the few people who go through my work, to help people understand what it is that I've recently understood about reality. And I keep trying to explain it, and I'm always tying it back to reality. I'm concretizing this, I'm objectifying it, it's all real, It's not imagined. I can explain it and demonstrate it, and you can understand it. I'm not talking about imagined things in our consciousness. It's all real. You just have to think about it and verify it. Test it in your own life. Look, analyze, compare, dissect, analyze it. Judge reality. Discriminate, differentiate, look at things, compare them, see things more clearly. This is what knowledge is about. The more you dissect, not talking about literal dissection and all that's going to cells. Yes, you're going to learn more about physical reality that way, but you can do it in a metaphysical capacity to dissect things metaphysically. In that's what consciousness is. Is consciousness isn't a physical thing itself. It exists in the physical, and that's what everything meant. Anyways, I'm getting ahead of myself. That's in a few slides. Anyways, I'll just stop there and I'll keep going, because I can just talk about side tangents and they'll relate to future infographics that I'll be talking about anyways, so it's better to just continue with my presentation. Sorry, thank you. Infographic number 7. Patterns, persistence, and knowledge. Patterns are a repetition. They demonstrate a form of persistence, which can become recognized as knowledge. It's always there, the pattern, the repetition is always there, but do you recognize it in order to grasp that knowledge, that aspect of reality, and bring it forth as knowledge? Persistence and repetition is the methodology. Wow, I can't speak this morning. Persistence and repetition is the methodology behind science. An apple persists. Persistence indicates existence. Pretty simple. If something persists, it indicates that it exists. Because you can have something that appears for a blip, a fraction of a second, and you think you saw something out of the corner of your eye, but did you really see it? Was it really there? Probably not. But if you thought it was there and you wanted to determine if it really did exist, if something went by you, by the corner of your eye and then it went around the building, like a car, you could run around the corner of the building and then see the car still persist. Was it really there or was it not there? Some things can't really be persisted. They're more complex in order to figure out how it happened, and then in order to make it repeatable and persisted again into the future, that can be more tricky. Maybe you'll need to create a new piece of technology to create some fluke of random occurrence in reality that only happens once every million years, but can be recreated at the press of a button if you develop the technology to do it or something. I'm just giving an example. So that thing that happened did exist, but it's not repeatable for a million years. So you can't know it as a truth, which will be my next slide, I think, the next infographic. If you can't repeat it, you can't verify it in reality, it's not really a truth. It might be a piece of knowledge, but knowledge has to be repeatable. So it's a possible piece of knowledge, and it turns into a belief if you believe it to be true, because you can't repeat it and verify it through demonstrable applications. If you can't repeat it, and it's not a pattern, it's not something in reality, then you can't really know it. You can know it as something that you thought you saw at the corner of your eye or something. So you'll have that knowledge, but was it real? What you saw, was it what you saw, or did you see something, or did your brain interpret what your eye saw? Did your mind or consciousness interpret what your eye saw as something else than what it was? So that's why you need the repeatability and persistence of that pattern in reality. And you see it again and again and again, and then it repeats and persists, that thing that you saw, or it doesn't. And then you realize, oh, my consciousness was playing tricks on me and I saw something that wasn't there. So, does that momentary thing exist, or was it something I only thought I saw? It's a valid question to ask. If it doesn't have a persistence and a repeatability as a pattern in existence, was it really existing? So, it perfectly could be, but the purpose of determining knowledge and truth is you have to have some way to verify it, which is the whole basis of veracity and verifiability. All has to do with truth. If you don't do that, then you don't have a truth. It's all in the etymology. All we have to do is look at words, analyze words and symbols and consciousness, and it's amazing what you're going to uncover about reality, about how we live in reality and how we create this human world reality that we've decided to create and live by and continue to live by. The methodology of science tests the repeated existence of things, even if they only appear for the duration of the method that tests for them. So you develop a test, just out of my head. You could test for the, I was going to say Higgs boson, whatever. That's like really out there for verifiability, but I guess the chemical reaction of something. You know, you put, let's say, a carbon baking soda, sodium bicarbonate, and vinegar. Vinegar is an acid and a base, and you mix them together and it produces a chemical reaction. So the appearance of that existence, of that reaction, isn't always there until you mix the two things together for that methodology of testing the existence of that reaction. And then when you use that methodology of mixing the two things together, you produce the result, and the existence is there. So it's only the existence is only evidenced for the duration of that method that tests for it. And then afterwards, well, there's no more chemical reaction between sulfur, between baking soda and vinegar, because they're no longer in contact. This is just how science works. It's how we verify things in reality. It doesn't mean, because if you can't verify something, you can't claim it to be a truth. That's all it means. Does it mean it can't be a truth? Well, something could be a truth,